The Sargasso Sea is an odd place. There it sits, under the mid-Atlantic anticyclone, with its boundaries ill-defined, such currents as there are swirling into it, and never a breeze to stir things up. Flotsam tends to hang around its centre for a long time. In the Age of Discovery, this came in the form of the sort of heavy sailing ship described in Coleridge's Ancient Mariner, with all hands dying a thirsty death, terminally becalmed under a bloody sun. Today, it's usually just rubbish. Ships power through at 15 knots, and yachts try to avoid it unless they have huge fuel tanks. But I wandered in there a couple of times back in the days when the only guides to weather systems were the sky, the barometer and the swell. Today, even if you miss fishing debris and the plastic bottles, the weed tells you when you're there, just as it always has. I'd imagine Sargasso weed to be swathes of kelp through which my boat would struggle as though sailing through treacle while I fought off attacks from the weed men. These characters are the shades of luckless sailors who drifted in and never made it out again. They're said to come scrambling over the rail on moonless nights, clad in dripping medieval togs, wreathed in bladder wrack and demanding water. I managed to give them the slip. I never saw a mermaid either, but you can't argue about the unreal quality to being becalmed without an engine in that airless wilderness. Initially, I'd sit for hours on deck observing the sky, looking for some sort of pattern in the sea, and generally trying to analyse the big picture from the evidence of my own senses. As the days passed, however, I found myself becoming fascinated by the minutiae of my environment. The weed forests of my fantasies simply did not exist. Instead, clumps of delicate plants drifted by, brilliant green in colour, studded with what looked like tiny berries. I pulled some aboard and stored it with its own water in a clear jar. The curve of the glass magnified the tiny ecosystem I had captured, revealing a whole world going on. Tiny crabs, smaller than my thumbnail, plied their trade among pocket-sized branches, while creatures too insignificant for even my young eyes to focus on darted from twig to twig. Here was I, a giant from another planet, observing the total sphere of existence for populations of relatively sophisticated life. In oceanic terms, the clumps of weed were placed far apart, like planets in a solar system, so each unit must have been largely self-sufficient. The revelation to me was that the scale of my ocean wandering, where distance was measured in weeks and thousands of miles, was actually composed of billions of units of life. Each was too insignificant to a lumbering ape like me to be noticed at all under normal circumstances, yet they all must make their contribution to the whole. Years later, far from the hot, airless Sargasso, two friends and I navigated a yacht close up to the carving edge of a 3-mile-wide glacier up in Greenland. Most of the time, any movement in the ice takes place in slow motion, but every so often a big berg falls over, or if your luck is really out, explodes, with serious implications for anyone close enough to feel the full benefit. The fallout from these events is frozen chunks, varying in size between a parish church and a cast-off welly. We salvaged a sinkful of the lesser examples and cracked them up that evening to cool our whisky. This did more than fulfil a lifelong ambition. Close examination of the glacier ice revealed a texture enriched by diminutive bubbles of trapped air. When backlit by the midnight sun and viewed through the amber of Johnny Walker's finest, the effect knocked spots off most of what's hung in the Tate Modern. Whatever we're looking at, the overview may be awesome, but the beauty often lies in the detail. It's the same with yachts. Polishing the brass, varnishing the tow rail and coiling down neatly can transform the way she looks without anyone ever noticing why.